Hello, I'm Razia Iqbal. Welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. It comes to you live from our studios in central London. Today, the Chief Executive Officer of the World Bank speaks to us about the need to adapt to climate change. We begin with an existential threat to us all. Climate change as a result of global warming. Not everyone thinks this is a reality. Though there is a growing consensus that the threats are great, there are powerful voices in the camp that continues to resist. Among them has been the President of the United States, who has previously dismissed climate change as a hoax. This week, though, in an interview with the CBS 60 Minutes programme, Mr. Trump said he accepts that the global climate is changing, though he is hedging his bets.
I think something's happening, something's changing, and it'll change back again. I don't think it's a hoax. I think there's probably a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made. I will say this. I don't want to give trillions and trillions of dollars. I don't want to lose millions and millions of jobs. I don't want to be put at a disadvantage.
President Trump speaking this week. Well, for all his power, the weight of scientific evidence against him is heavy. Last week, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the UN body that provides an objective, scientific view on climate change, issued its gravest warning yet about what society needs to do to counter the impact of global warming, the changes we all need to make. The impact of climate change is something which the Global Commission on Adaptation will seek to help countries deal with. The commission will be led by the former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, Bill Gates, and the World Bank CEO, Kristalina Georgieva. I've been speaking to her.
Climate change is not linear. It is not like you go with temperature one bit and then the impact is the same one bit. There are system issues that can create much more dramatic consequences. And this is what we are warned is ahead of us. But let's face it, even with 1 degree, which is where we are, or maybe a bit more, we have to adapt. And actually, human race has been adapting to climate conditions throughout history. What is new is not that we need to adapt. What is new is the scale, the scope, and the speed with which we need to adapt.
Give me some concrete examples of adaptation strategies.
The critical areas for adaptation are food security, coastal zones, urban areas, and the future of mobility of people. Let me start with the most important, food security. Take the case of Bangladesh, which is quite an extraordinary example of dedication to deal with climate impacts. Bangladesh in the 70s would lose hundreds of thousands of people to floods. Today, they still lose people, and every life loss is a life loss, but it is in the hundreds and the low thousands. How do they do it? By building alert systems, and then all they do in their economy is from the angle of climate resilience. One very vivid example is farmers in Bangladesh switching from chicken to ducks. When flood comes, chicken drown, ducks swim. Or building their schools so they can be resilient to floods. They're lifted up, but they also can be shelter for not only children, but the community surrounding. And then putting solar panels on top, so they are not dependent on grid, because when floods come, very often the grid suffers.
Let's just look at the raison d'etre of the World Bank. The idea of being able to lift poor countries out of poverty is a very noble one. But I wonder, in the context that you're speaking, whether you are willing to acknowledge that the more infrastructure, the more building projects that the World Bank engages in order to lift poor countries out of poverty, if they contribute to the country's carbon footprint, doesn't the World Bank have to completely rethink how it helps to lift people out of poverty?
I'm so glad you're asking this question. The answer is yes, we have to rethink how we do development. And actually, adaptation and development are two sides of the same coin. Adaptation is a development imperative. Because many poor countries are at higher risk to climate change, despite the fact that they have done very little to contribute to it.
There are reports, though, that are very critical of the way in which the World Bank finances projects, particularly in the area of mining, which cause widespread environmental damage to farmers. I'm thinking about the World Bank finance gold mine in Peru. And I wonder to what extent, you know, when you say that the World Bank is thinking about these things, to what extent is it rectifying and not making the same mistakes as have been made in Peru, for example?
We are a learning institution. And actually, this applies to the whole world. And we need to all learn faster and act in a determined manner.
I just want to focus on another couple of World Bank finance projects, the development off the coast of Ghana and the coal-fired power plant in South Africa, both of which, the building of those really, you know, contributed to the release of greenhouse gases.
For the coastal areas, we have adopted the adaptation approach quite decisively. What we are doing in coastal areas is to concentrate on ecological restoration and measures that are protecting the coast from erosion. And as for coal, we don't fund coal. 2010 was the last year we did it. And we don't fund it because we believe that low carbon is a critical pathway for the whole world and also for the interests of developing countries themselves.
How do you persuade countries that they need to rethink the kind of help that they get from the World Bank?
Mother Nature is on our side. What people see everywhere is the dramatic increase of frequency and intensity of climate-related natural disasters. When I'm in Africa, for example, in Chad, the president of Chad was telling me, "We know how to deal with drought, but now we have flash floods, and that is a phenomenon we have never seen. And by the way, the droughts are becoming more frequent and more severe." So the fact that climate change is already having a dramatic impact on well-being of people is very helpful to make the case. But then we also do the economics of low carbon growth, and we demonstrate to countries why going low carbon is creating more jobs and more opportunities than going the traditional higher carbon way. There is no country today where, when we talk about climate change, the reaction would be lack of interest. And I think we have to
You could argue that the United States is absolutely at the heart of going against what you've just said. The way in which President Trump frames the conversation and the narrative on climate change is completely the opposite of what you've just said.
The United States is a big country. And if you look at what the business is doing there and what many of the municipal, city and state leaders are talking about and doing, so I think we have to be more concentrated on building the strength of coalitions for climate action across the board and lifting up what we do. It is virtually a matter of the future of the people we love. I mean, my daughter and my granddaughter depend on whether I act responsibly today.